I'm noticing that some people are putting in the chat a greeting and where they're coming from in the world, and I just want to invite you to join them and putting in a greeting where you are as a way to connect with each other and just to see the to get a sense of the global sangha that we're a part of here. It's such a beautiful thing that we can come together across the world and be in this field of practice. It's really extraordinary. It's even though Sangha Live has been doing this since before the pandemic definitely has taught me how much connection and intimacy and collective effervescence, to use the words of Emile Durkheim, an anthropologist, how much collective effervescence can be generated by being together online. And just the invitation to connect through being able to see each other's faces, you know, being together in person in a Dharma hall, in a meditation hall together is very special and lovely. But what we do have that we don't have in the meditation hall in person is this ability to see one another's faces, and it's very connecting. So I invite you, if you are open to that, to moving to gallery view and taking in some of your faces. And it's okay if some of you can't come on camera, of course, no problem. We can see, in some cases, see your picture. And in other cases, we see your names. And if you can put in the chat a little greeting, we also see where you are and get a sense of each other and a sense of connection to Sangha. And we're going to take this invitation as a segue into practice. We're moving into the space of practicing together. There's something very powerful about practicing meditation together, co-meditating, and about bringing Sangha into your home via this vehicle of the miracle of technology to begin to create a refuge field. And you know, when we meditate, the first practice that we do to sort of set the stage, you know, just to create setting for ourselves as we enter into this deep practice of self-discovery and exploration of our inner life, we begin by setting up a field of refuge. And the field of refuge is really a understanding that we are not alone. When we practice meditation, that we are held in a field of care. And you know, our practice in the Dharma in part is to start to understand even that we have a field of care. You know, even if you feel very alone in the world, or maybe right now, you know, if you're in a stage in life where you feel isolated or lonely, you can change that through the power of your consciousness or awareness as you begin to invite supportive presence, even if people aren't physically present in your house, for example, you can invite their sense of being into your space, a sense of support. And so let's begin our refuge by just understanding, just taking in that we're here together and that we have a field of support right here. We have these beautiful souls and presences. And even if you don't know anyone here, if this is your first time being here, it's all right because these are friends that you haven't yet met, you know. So that's how friendship begins. That's how Sangha begins, as we show up with a willingness to see and be seen, and then goes from there. You know, community is built from there. And then to also just closing your eyes for a minute to recollect the field of support in your life. And sometimes the field of support is as simple and as close to you as your cat, your kitty, maybe. Pets are an amazing part of our support network. I have a dog. She's close by, so I'm calling in Luna, my dog. And it's as close as your family, the family that you are a part of. Maybe you have beloveds in your house or in other houses far away, but they're around in your consciousness. That support, finding that field of support is calling on who's there for you in times of need or when you need a friend. That's part of your refuge field. So calling in those people who are there for you when you need someone. And calling in, this field of support can include the natural world. So tuning in to what's around you in the natural world, maybe a house plant or right outside your window, a tree, even the sky, even the elements. Even if you're in the center of a busy city, look out and you can see the clouds, you can see the sky. Someone is showing us northern lights on the screen. I am fascinated. I don't know if those are, it could be a, wow. So maybe it's northern lights, or maybe it's clouds or sunshine, or so just calling in the natural world as your field of support. And recognizing we are primordially interdependent with this world and with these beings, they are our living refuge, and we are theirs. Just resting in that awareness. And then as a short practice of metta, going from this safe field of connection and just opening the eyes to take in Sangha present and letting your eyes just drift a bit around the screen and just landing on one square here, one person who's here with your eyes. And it's okay if the camera's off, but just sending some loving kindness to this person. Here's your eyes have landed on, and you're just giving rise to this wish. May you have happiness and the causes of happiness. May you have happiness and the causes of happiness. May you have happiness and the causes of happiness. I'm sending the wish of love to one person here. And I'm letting our eyes drift a little and wishing that person well and coming to rest on another square, someone here. You don't need to know them. That doesn't have to be someone you've ever met, but just giving rise to this wish of consciousness that the person is here, this precious being, and sending them a wish of compassion. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May you be free of suffering and cause of suffering. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. Sending that wish of love, connecting. And so, moving now into the space of our meditation practice, you may want to turn your body a little bit away from the screen. That's what I like to do. It's up to you. You can also close your eyes. Comfortable. Our practice. And we're just practicing here a short meditation on savoring. You just begin by dropping down from our thinking mind and into the feeling body. And letting our attention, our awareness drop all the way down to the base of the body where your seat meets the cushion or the chair. And just noticing that down there at the base of your body, you are already stable and grounded. Down here at the base of your body, you are intimate with the earth. And at first it seems like you're observing this earthbound body. Let's see if you can dive in just a little deeper so that you are this earthbound Body. Saturating the lower part of your body with your mind. Becoming one with the grounded. Sensation. Being really curious about this feeling of being grounded, open. Appreciative, savoring your groundedness. Now letting your attention move up to the hips. Into the soft belly. Noticing as you inhale that rise of the belly, the sense of expansion in your chest. And as you exhale, the belly relaxing. The shoulders relaxing on the exhale. And just resting your attention on this breath. This cool, fresh in breath, the soft, warm out breath. And the space between. I'm going beyond just noticing breath. Pouring your attention into this movement of the breath, into the sensations, and letting yourself be absorbed. By this breath, carried and staying open and curious, what does the breath offer me right now? As you notice these micro sensations of the breath, just really savoring each little sensation, enjoy, appreciate. Wow, every breath, taking in the world. With every out breath, offering yourself to the world. Not an out breath, letting your senses open. Opening to the soundscape. Seeing if you can be wide open enough to welcome all the sounds just as they are, pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, just welcoming all of it. And staying curious. Wow, this sound. Let the sound and the soundscape really take your attention. Let yourself go into that sound. Moving from attention to appreciation. Just, whoa. Like a sound becoming your mindfulness bell, bringing you present. And next exhale, continuing to explore senses, turning your attention to the feeling of the air on your skin, this gentle aliveness, this tingly sensation on the surface of the skin with even the slightest movement of air. Just noticing that feeling and savoring, the air on my skin. The temperature, either chilly and wakeful or warm and soft or whatever the quality is there, just noticing it and appreciating what it does for the body, what it does for your mind and heart. And on our next exhale, just letting the eyes gently open and take in your visual field. The light, and the color. And if you're visually impaired, taking in the mind's light and color. What's seen in the mind's eye? Just appreciating that form, appreciating the texture. Appreciating shape, taking it all in. With curiosity and wonder.
And savoring the sound of the gong. Feel free to reorient if you're turned away from the screen. Feel free to come back. So, some practice there together, practicing a meditation on oriented around the topic for today, which is the art of savoring. So, we often think about meditation as being a set of instructions for how to bring ourselves into a relationship with concentration or focus, or else as an activity that helps us to relax and de-stress. You know, that's very much what Jon Kabat-Zinn landed on when he developed MBSR back in the day, meditation as this doorway to a greater sense of ease and relaxation. And of course, in the Buddhist tradition, right, meditation is an integral part of the path to awakening. So meditation has something to do with healing, with uprooting our suffering at the basis. You know, at least in theory, right? That's meditation. But when we learn how to practice, when we learn how to meditate, I think we think about, or at least I did, meditation as a series of steps of a practice, right? Meditation is a practice with technique. Meditation is a technology for an inner technology for awakening and for increasing our self-awareness and presence and so forth. We often think about meditation as a practice with a way, a technology, a way of being, a way of developing. You know, I don't know how much we think about the importance of how we meditate. We think about this is meditation, this is what I should be doing, these are the steps, but then how am I engaging that practice? How in the micro moments am I engaging with that practice? And so that's kind of what I want to address here is the how. A little bit. We can work with our practice as something that we
should do, like a daily practice. We ought to be getting to the cushion. We ought to be doing this. Or we can relate to meditation as an invitation to transform our relationship with the present moment. And it's in that arena, the transformation of our relationship with the present moment, that this art of savoring can be useful, helpful, help us land with that in that place where that transformation can happen, where we can actually change how we are, not just what we're doing, but actually how we are meeting this present moment. And I think initially when we study meditation, one of the key terms that we learn, of course, is this word mindfulness. You know, mindfulness, which in the Sanskrit is smriti. Smriti actually means to remember. So mindfulness is actually pretty good translation for smriti, because it's what the Buddha meant. When the Buddha said we need to smriti, we need to remember, he meant remember what is happening in the present moment. He meant we need to pay attention to what's going on in the present moment. So he used smriti, memory, in this particular way of remembering that we need to come back from our distracted mind and re-engage with whatever it is that we're practicing with, whatever the direction is that we're practicing with. So re-engage with the breath, you know, re-engage with the body, re-engage. Remembering to do that, smriti, is mindfulness. But you know, mindfulness, this is what I'm going to be talking about here, just paying attention, right? Because smriti means something like that, to pay attention. Literally means to remember. But in terms of meaning, it means paying attention, to become mindful, is to pay attention, smriti. But paying attention, I'm going to say here, for a long term, for a joyful practice of meditation, for a full and fruitful practice over time, we need more than just paying attention. Paying attention can get old, you know, and returning to your breath can start to feel boring. You guys ever struggle with boredom? Does anyone struggle with boredom in meditation? Many people do. Many people do. So how do we keep our practice full? How do we want to come back to the cushion? How do we create a practice? Because we know, theoretically, or you may know, unless you're very new to meditation, you may not, but you may know that meditation is a good idea, right? And if even if you're here, you're probably exploring that, right? Maybe meditation is a good idea. But if many people here have an established practice, have had an established practice for 10 or long or more years, I just even look at the screen. I know some of you people. I know you do have such a practice. So we might be committed in this, in theory, to meditation, but that's different from being joyful about your practice, like to the point where you can't imagine skipping a day of practice because you don't want to. It's too good. It's too helpful. But a lot of us, especially initially, in theory, we know it's good for us, but in practice, we have a lot of trouble getting to the cushion and staying on the cushion. And when we're on the cushion, we have trouble settling down, right? We do. So what do we do about that? And so I wanted to begin to explore this with you. What I'm sharing is a we could say like a technique or a A process. I'm going to share with you a process that I've been exploring for several years now that I'm calling the art of savoring. And it has been very, very beneficial for my practice. And I think where it started was just maybe during the pandemic, as everything came to a halt, right? Everything came to a halt. And we had to be homebound, right? Essentially, we were all forced to slow down. And in my case, at the time, I was in Boston and confined to my house in Boston all of a sudden. Initially my thought was, this is great. Essentially, we're all forced into retreat. That's pretty cool. And we can make our own hours and, do our somewhat and do our things online. Now we're doing our work online, or unless you were a nurse or a doctor, you may have been going out on the front lines, as many people were, fire people and so forth. But some of us were homebound, and it really began to bring me more into a deeper relationship with my practice. So I'd say it sort of started in that period there. So how do we get from paying attention to loving the present moment? I think when we're paying attention, we're doing what we think we should be doing in meditation. Oh, here's my breath. I should be paying attention to my breath. Or here's my body. I'm practicing embodied presence. I should be present in this now with my body. But how do I get into a really intimate place with that, where it's not just paying attention, but it's loving being present with all of this, just as it is? How do I get there? How do we get there? So I wanted to introduce here. Some steps to how to do that. But maybe before I do that, I want to tell a little story. So when I was a young woman, I was in a monastery for a while. I did a deep dive on the Dharma, and probably prematurely, when I look back on it, I jumped into the deep end of the pool in the Dharma world, so to speak. And when I was at my senior year in college, I went into a monastery and just started living there and practicing there, and ended up staying there for many years. And the abbot of that monastery, it was an abbot of that monastery who was this Tibetan from Eastern Tibet. He was short and heavy set, very, very strong person, and he was the one that was mostly giving instructions there at the monastery. And one day I was I remember going through this day, and I had a kind of a realization. I'd been there for about 3 months in the monastery, and I was a young woman, just 21 or something, and I was trying really hard to be a diligent practitioner of meditation and kind of following the monks and nuns around. And I noticed, of course, the monks and nuns have a very rigorous schedule of chanting and practicing and ritual, and then sitting practice, and then eating, and then going back into work, working around the monastery and then coming back. And I was basically shadowing these monks and nuns. And I started to develop this kind of strange dualism, I might say, like a kind of a bifurcating between, oh, well, there's this time that we have on the cushion, and this time when we're practicing ritual and chanting, that's when we're doing the Dharma. And then when I'm over here cooking, I had to do a lot of cooking. We all had to do a lot of chores, cooking, vacuuming the meditation hall, or folding clothes, or washing towels or all the things that had to happen to keep a monastic institution going. We were all participating, also construction and varnishing and painting, and lots of projects were happening, and I was, in and out of those as well. And I started to think, well, when I'm doing those things, it's not the Dharma. When I'm doing those things, I'm basically wasting my time. When I'm practicing the Dharma, I'm truly doing I'm doing the meditation, I'm doing the chanting, I'm doing the real stuff. But when I'm off the cushion, I would just rush through my chores to try to get back on the cushion. That's how I started living. I was like, I need to get through this. I need to eat my food, wash the dishes. I got to get back to the cushion. And I noticed I was getting stressed out that way. I was like, no, there's practice, and then there's this other stuff that's really getting in the way. Life. And so I went to the teacher and I said, I just started to notice this about myself that what do I do when I'm washing dishes and stuff? It's just a waste of time. And what do I do to get through it more quickly? Or how can I spend more time on the cushion? How can I live a life where I just kind of give up the life part and I just live the Dharma part? And he had a really interesting response. He said, no, the time between is really useful. When you're eating, just eat. When you're washing dishes, just wash dishes. When you're cleaning up, just clean. When you're sweeping, just sweep. Just sweep. So he uses this just, right? So I started, at first I didn't understand at all what he meant. But then I started taking that into my time in between. And I was like, oh yeah. As I started doing the dishes, I'm like, when I'm doing the dishes, I'm not just doing the dishes. I'm rushing. I'm thinking about when I can get back to the cushion. I'm future thinking, or I'm ruminating on, yesterday and how I could have done better yesterday, or that, that argument I had with so and so over breakfast in the morning, or whatever it was that happened. So I wasn't just doing the dishes. I wasn't absorbed in the present moment in those activities. And I started to realize that practice isn't about what we're doing, it's about how we are, right? It's about a way of being that is operative on the cushion, off the cushion. So that was a doorway. That was also a doorway for me. But during the pandemic, I really started to think about, the habits that we have that we try to escape the present moment. So what is this art of savoring? This art of savoring. How do we do it? There's a difference, I would submit, between being mindful, this smriti, and savoring. Being mindful is paying attention, but savoring is extending and enjoying your present moment experience. And in order to extend and enjoy, mindfulness is a factor. Like paying attention is an important, a critical factor, but it's not all you need. So you can be, for example, in a difficult moment and you're mindful, you're paying attention to what's difficult, but you want to escape it, right? You can be mindful in the present moment, and you are, if you have something joyful happen, particularly joyful, you might naturally start to savor. But when you're in the present moment and something that you don't really like is happening, you're going to resist it, you're going to push it away. So even if you're paying attention to it, there is this sense of I don't want to have what's happening happen. So what do we need to do to start to enjoy, not just tolerate what's happening in the present moment, but actually to enjoy it, or not just keep our attention on the breath, but also love our breaths and love being with the breath. So in this art of savoring, I'd say the first step is we have to slow down, because we can't really come into a relationship with our senses or even the inner world, what's happening in here, either in the body or in the mind, until we slow our energy down enough that we can pay attention, that we can be mindful. And that's, of course, why do we practice meditation on retreat? Why do we develop mindfulness in retreat? Why do we still the body before, as a technique for developing smriti, for developing mindfulness? It's because when we slow down, when we slow the body down, when we create an environment where we are permitted to let go of busyness, when we do that, our nervous system starts to settle down. And when our nervous system starts to settle down, our energy begins to relax. Our mind begins to relax. There's a kind of a yogi figure in the Tibetan tradition named Milarepa, and he used to say, when you're so how do you come into alignment in practice? First, your body needs to come into alignment. If your body's in alignment, your energy will come into alignment. If your energy is in alignment, your mind will come into alignment. That's a quote from Milarepa. He's this yogi in the Tibetan tradition. And I think that's a very wise, instruction, that when our body gets still, our energy slows down and becomes more still, and then our mind becomes more still. So slowing down is the first step to savoring. And the second is the smriti in the conventional sense. We need to pay attention. And if we're thinking about, let's just think about coming into a graceful relationship with the present moment. Slowing down, paying attention to what is happening in our larger experiential field. And what is the experiential field? Well, the experiential field is very connected, of course, to our senses, right? Because we can't experience the present moment in any other way, really. I mean, we can experience it with our consciousness, but even that in Buddhist understanding is a sense, the mind sense, right? So we experience the present moment through our body, our feelings, our tactile sensation. We experience the present moment through our hearing, what we're hearing in the soundscape. We experience the present moment through what we're seeing, through the visual field. We experience the present moment through interoception. Interoception is the inner sense of our feelings inside of the body. We experience the present moment through proprioception. Proprioception is the sense of our body in space. Even realizing that we have a body is enabled by an innate sense, which has a location in the brain called proprioception, which is the sense of the body in space. If that part of the brain is damaged, people have no sense of their body in space. So that's how they know that there is this part of the brain where proprioception is housed. And we experience it also through smell, right? We experience our world through what's coming in through our olfactory sense, right? So all of these ways are the way that we experience the experiential field is through our senses. So the second is to pay attention and open to the experiential field. And the third step in this art of savoring is to choose a dimension of your sense experience. So choose a sense experience. Just to help you get in touch with this art of savoring, we could do this with the whole experiential field, but I think that's an advanced practice. To be able to savor everything at once is a bit of an advanced practice. So just to make it more, to get into a more deep relationship with that art, choose one part of your sense experience. Choose a sound that you're hearing, for example, or choose your breath. Let's choose the breath this time, right now, as I'm talking to you. Let's choose the breath. And so start paying attention to your breath. And you'll notice in the meditation, right, I said pay attention to your breath, but now go deeper. And what does go deeper mean? When we're paying attention to the breath, especially when we're new to meditation, there's a sense of a me paying attention to breath, right? This sense of a separation between you and this thing that is your breath. I am paying attention to my breath. But it's possible to go deeper than that, to saturate the breath with your attention. So I like to use this image myself of pouring, so like a liquid image, pouring your attention now into that sensation of the breath, so that you are not so far apart from your breath anymore. You're becoming so intimate with it that it's like you are in your breath. You are your breath. So starting to pour that attention in there, to dive, let's use the word dive, to dive into the sense experience. So this fourth step in the art of savoring, once you've chosen the sense experience, the fourth is to dive into the sense experience. And what are some ways we can dive? How do we take that dive into the breath? First, explore the micro sensations of the breath. So, what's an example of a micro sensation? Get really specific with what you're experiencing when you're breathing. For example, go into your nostrils, and when you inhale, you can feel this tingling inside your nostrils. Let's try that right now. Just like feel that fresh tingling on the inside of your nostrils. So start to explore these little sensations. There's also the belly, right? The belly is rising and the belly is falling. Oh, and my chest is expanding, my heart is opening. Oh yeah, and oh, now my heart is relaxing. The breath is actually happening through the whole body, so you can start to notice how is it affecting your body as you're breathing, right? Start exploring those micro sensations. That's one way to dive. And another way to dive is that saturation. So the difference between watching and saturating, right? So I already talked about that, pouring the attention in. So four, dive into the sense experience. The fifth step in this art of savoring, enjoy the sense experience. Enjoy that sense experience. So, what would that look like? First, just appreciating it. Appreciate what you're experiencing and notice, for example, how it's affecting your nervous system. As you breathe, like, how is this affecting me? Now, they say, research says now that on the out breath, when you're exhaling, your parasympathetic nervous system is activated. Now, what is the parasympathetic nervous system? It's the part of our nervous system that relaxes the body, that relaxes. It's the part of our nervous system that down regulates. So that every time you exhale, your whole nervous system, this is not conscious, is down regulating. And every time you inhale, this is, if you were hooked up to a machine, the machine would show that every time you inhale, your nervous system is up regulating. So you're getting stimulated with every inhale. And you're relaxing with every exhale. That's actually happening, whether or not you're conscious of it. I mean, there's, when they hook people up to these things and they see what's happening when someone inhales, their nervous system is being stimulated, is being waked up. And when you exhale, your nervous system is easing. So So beginning to notice that and then appreciating, oh, the enlivening energy of the inhale and the relaxing energy of the exhale, right? Beginning to say, oh, that's really useful, right? The enlivening part and the relaxing part. We need both, right, in this human life to really to live a full and a safe life. In fact, we need both, right? We're exercising our nervous system with every inhale and every exhale. So start to appreciate what you're experiencing, and also just things like, in the meditation, I was sort of went down this road of when we inhale, we're breathing in the exhale of the trees. We're breathing our whole world in when we inhale, right? We're breathing in air that has been breathed in and out for centuries, for generations, by our ancestors. We're breathing some of the air of our ancestors when we inhale and we exhale. When we're exhaling, we're offering part of our body out into the world. So just that kind of appreciating of what's happening when you're breathing. And then also there's this possibility of appreciating the uniqueness and the novelty that you discover as you're paying attention to these micro sensations. You notice things you may never have noticed before, like how the breath is and how it feels, ways that it feels, parts of your body that tingle. Just beginning to take joy in the uniqueness of the breath and the novelty of the breath. That's the fifth. So enjoy the sense experience. And then the sixth is to guard against analyzing and going down conceptual trains of thinking. Because, of course, when we're focusing in that way, when we're really paying attention, sometimes our thinking mind can go to town on that, right? So we start noticing something about the breath, and pretty soon we're imagining, oh, I wonder what that means. Maybe I should look that up on chat. We start down that road of, wanting to know more, or, so just being attentive to, that can be its own thing, and there can be enjoyment in the conceptuality. But we're savoring, and we're working on savoring the present moment, so the conceptual mind can really take us out of our present moment. And we have lots of our life to be outside of the present moment. We are such thinkers, so we don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I'm untraining myself to think. No, it's okay. Or it's going to come back, right? So just, letting go of some of that conceptual mind. Six. And then seventh, extending the attention that we've been paying, say to the breath, for example, with intention. So noticing in ourselves this habit that we have of wanting to skip to the next thing. What next thing, right? There is no next thing, really. I mean, there could be a next activity, but there's no moment other than this moment, and there's no more important moment than this moment. So noticing that habit, of wanting to just kind of live a little bit in the future, is forward-leaning habit, and use the breath, right, to come present again. Because we're just using the breath as an example here. And then finally, the eighth in our art of savoring, which is one that something we may not think of all the time, but it can be very powerful, is expressing later, after we've been engaged in this deep way with what is happening in the present moment, share it with another person. So, for example, I've just noticed this really powerful part of what it feels like to breathe. And just sharing it with a loved one, sharing it with somebody in your household. Of course, if it's sound of a bird, I just sat for 5 minutes just really enjoying the sound of this bird. So just that kind of sense of enhancement by co-appreciating or sharing your appreciation for the present moment with others, with another person. So those are some of my thoughts on this art of sabering, and I want to open it up to everybody here, to hear a little bit about what works for you. How do you savor? And or what did this little reflection bring up? And just want to open it to the Sangha field. And so you can feel free to raise your hand using the raise hand function on Zoom, which is down there at the bottom of your screen where it says reactions. And so you can raise your hand that way, and Marnie will call on you. Marnie, if you could help. Thank you.
Yes. Or
What experience have you had lately? What have you lately been savoring? That's another one I can ask you all. What have you been savoring?
While we're waiting for others, I've been savoring the sound of the rain, both in meditation and w just while preparing a meal or making a pot of tea or something. So, okay. Is it Shemalaya? Am I saying that right? Oops. Where'd you go?
I think she'll come back. I don't know what happened there.
Maybe
Oh, well,
she
there
well.
she is. She's trying to unmute. I can see her.
Oh, can you hear me now? Hi everyone. Hi Lama Willa. One of the things I've been really savoring is the bird calls in the morning and recognizing that what I thought was just one or two different types of sparrow in my yard is actually four completely different types of sparrow. And so just savoring the connection of sound and sight to discover this much larger field of sparrows than I had known was there. And it's so, I sit outside every morning, and some days I can come in and not really have noticed much of anything because I'm thinking about the day. But when I just listen to those little sounds, then I can see that there's so much more there in that moment. So thank you for reminding us about this and for this teaching this morning.
Thank you, Shimalaya. Thank you. Yeah, the sounds of the natural world are so powerful for drawing us into practice. You know, practice can be just listening to the wind, to just absorbing yourself, you know, here or the rain here. I'm on the Big Island of Hawaii. That's where I am at the moment. I did share my location. You all shared yours so generously. I've enjoyed seeing them pop up there all over. You guys are from everywhere. And here there's a powerful wind that comes up often, and it can be a little unsettling at times, like howling, through the house. And it's been helpful for me to remember the house isn't going to fall down. And that I can just rest on the howling, and it becomes practice. It just become draws me into this place of just I am here now, and this is very actually settling. I've gone from being unsettled by the wind to being more settled by it. Yes, yeah, others, I
Patrice.
think.
Yeah, hi. So one of the, I live in the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area, and as I drive around, there's pretty much beauty everywhere. So I certainly savor that. And then one of the things I savor on a more personal level is music. I'm a musician. I play the cello, but I love jazz music and what's known as the Great American Songbook. And so I avail myself of being able to listen to that both live and via the radio and CDs and so forth. So those are two areas of beauty that I really savor very much.
Thank you so much, Patrice, for offering that. Music, amazing, to savor that, to savor music and to dive in, to really dive in and lose yourself in the music. And when I hear you say that, it's reminding me of also dance. I've been lately very into dance and finding that as a savoring experience that we can savor with our entire body. We can savor with the senses, and we can also savor like the whole, and the body can help with savoring the music, right? Just that movement. Thanks, Patrice. That's
Yes.
awesome. I
Thank
appreciate
you.
your share. I see a question in the chat, so I'm going to take that one, and then we'll take the next one live. This is from Javier. I have a question. Hope you can answer it. I feel very excited and passionate. How could I control it? Or, well, not control it, but embracing it. Sometimes I feel afraid about being passionate and very excited. I mean, excitement is interesting. Excitement is when our nervous system is very uplifted, right? It's a buzzing kind of feeling. It's possible. There are some practices of meditation. At least in the tradition in which I practice, in which that passion actually is a catalyst for waking up, and that the excitement can be like fuel for waking up. But there is a kind of there's a kind of process that I think we work with in practice. Of because we can get carried away by our passion, carried away by our excitement, and when we get too carried away, we get on a roller coaster, right? Because the passion and the excitement can become depression, right? At the on the downslope, right, so to speak. So how do we learn how to kind of channel the passion and channel the energy of excitement into practice, by starting to step back, kind of with our consciousness or our mind, and just hold it in a bigger space, like hold it and allow it to rise, to be bright, and then to liberate itself. Like, we don't have to do anything about it. We don't have to do anything about it necessarily. Or to channel it, to channel the passion into care, into kindness, into positive energy, good works. I think, even that you say, Javier, that you're aware of your passion and your excitement is in itself such a good thing, right? Everything starts with self-awareness. So, I would just kind of say not to be so afraid of it. Passion is amazing, and excitement can be channeled into constructive work for your own awakening, for the benefit of others. And when it comes up in meditation, to step back and to hold it, to breathe with it, I guess. Nothing we have to fear really that much in practice. We can make room for all of it. I can't see if there's other hands, but I'm counting on you, Marnie.
Yeah, so a hand just came up right now. Charles, let me spotlight you, Charles.
Hey. So at one point you were talking about listening to everything and seeing everything, and maybe it was like too much to try to do everything all at once. And now it's made me remember last spring I was found online Ken MacLeod's Unfettered Mind Mahamudra classes. And he gradually, in his classes, got to where I remember sitting out on the deck and the seagulls and all the leaves fluttering and the ripples in the water and all the sounds and my breath and everything that I felt inside for one time. I felt it all at once, and it was like so thoughtless. It was like so there. And now you've brought me back to remember that. That's really something to savor.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you. And it can be helpful, can't it, to remember to like build up a catalog, not a catalog, we call it a bank, build up a treasury of experiences of savoring. Every time we savor, we build up a treasury, right? We're starting to feed into a treasury of satisfaction with the present moment as it is. And sometimes it's catalyzed, right, by a meditation session with a meditation teacher in a beautiful setting. But it's also possible to catalyze it all the time as a daily thing in our practice so that we are building up this wealth of experiences that are coming into a more graceful relationship with what is. And of course, what is isn't always pleasant. So we start with savoring these sensations, and we can move on to start to savor pain and savor challenge, to begin to stay. Maybe the word is to stay when challenge comes up and not just try to move away fast, like, I don't want to know about this, I don't want this to be a part of my life. But rather, oh, I remember how to be present with, how to savor, how to look with curiosity into this, right? Thank you, Charles, for that glimpse of a savor experience. I feel like I'm co-savoring it when you talk about it. I can see the seagulls. Thank you.
And one more hand, and then we'll watch the time now. But Jonathan?
Hi, thanks first for the practice and reminding of the practice of diving in, and so the feeling of losing the distinction between the observer and the observed. It's a very amazing feeling and something to be savored. My question is, that feeling is so amazing. How can you prevent getting attached to it?
Right. Well, getting attached to it is part of the process, I think. Are we going to attach to pleasant experiences? That is our habit. So I think there is something in there, Jonathan. I really appreciate the question of an invitation to savor, enjoy, extend, and let go at the end, right? Be able to let go when it's time to move to the next thing. And that should probably go in the steps of savoring, is the letting go too, the ability to let go and to not to crave the return too much. But I think so there's an interesting thing that Shantideva, Shantideva, right, who wrote the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. He was an Indian master in the long time ago, 8th century, 9th century. He wrote a beautiful Dharma text called the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And in that
Dharma text, he says some interesting, really interesting thing. He says, so the question comes up in that text. If we're not supposed to crave anything, then we shouldn't also be craving being on a path, and we shouldn't be craving enlightenment either, should we? Right? And you know what his answer is, you would think would be, yes, you shouldn't, right? No, but that's not what he says. He says some cravings, like the craving to awaken, like the passion to awaken, like the yearning to awaken, are constructive cravings. And there's something about the craving that keeps you on the path for a while, even though in the end there is no goal. There's really no goal. There's really no place to go, even. But still, there's a service that that craving provides us with, or it may be a skillful way of craving, if we have to crave something. That's what Shantideva says. So I've always found that interesting when I think about my own practice, like joy, right? Having joy in your practice makes it much easier to be in the practice, right? Taking joy in your practice, but there is some yearning to experience the joy again, and that brings you back to the cushion so that you can continue to practice. And when you come back to the cushion and continue to practice, you have the context in which to recondition and which to move towards freedom. So when you look at all of those causes and conditions, maybe we need a little bit of craving, or a little bit of, I mean, I don't know what the word is, a little bit of interest and forward motion to get ourselves into a place of where we're going, you know. Yeah. But thank you.
Yes,
That's
in the end,
very
it's a balancing act.
the balancing act. That's right. Yeah, some letting go. Yeah, right. Thank you, Jonathan.
I see one more hand. Do you have time for one more? There's
Sure, I
2 minutes
do.
left. This is the last hand, and after this, we'll wrap up.
Thanks, Marnie. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, Christine.
A couple of weeks ago, my son and daughter-in-law bought me a birthday present for a Mamma Mia party that was happening here in London. And I just loved the fact that it was such fun. It was absolutely such fun. It was the dancing and it was the music and it was everybody was there with smiles and the lovely mixing that went on. And it was you saying about, of course, Dharma is everywhere. And I hadn't actually thought, yes, this was also part of Dharma because it was part of that life experience as well. So it was a nice way to be able to link in off the cushion enjoyment and joy and the fun of just dancing and being part of something that was lovely. So linking the two together has been really helpful of recognizing it doesn't just have to be on the cushion. It's it's all the things that happen in life. Thank you very much. It was I enjoyed
Thanks,
it.
Christine.
Yeah,
Thank
great.
you. Thank
Yeah.
you. Yeah, I mean, part of what Dharma is finding a joy just because we're alive. And there are some things we do, like dancing and listening to music and being in community, that bring out a deep sense of joy in being alive. And that is so, I, to me, that is Dharma. I mean, being in a place where we are feeling truly alive is a doorway into the heart of what it means to awaken. I just think I see that as Dharma. That sounds amazing. Thank you for sharing.
I have put into the chat your personal website and the Donna link in case anyone wants to contribute, and a link of our upcoming calendar. And so, however you would like to close the session, Lama Willa, that would be lovely. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for coming and for staying until now. I really appreciate that. I noticed quite a few people have left over the course of the teaching. I don't know why, but that's what happens, I guess, sometimes. But I really appreciate that you stayed and that we practiced together and explored this topic together. Thank you.